RSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. China. The headlines in Bloomberg are at once confusing, but suggest what we have here is a weakness that we've not seen in these decades of Chinese miracle. China makes surprise policy U-turns in quest for growth. There's a picture of Xi Jinping standing in front of a red background. China deflation pressure worsens as economy slumps. Xi warns China officials to avoid, quote, collusion with big business. And COVID rips through rural China ahead of Lunar New Year migration. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, and many years in East Asia for the Wall Street Journal at Hong Kong, a city that is now darkened and closed to business, to freedom, to journalism because of Xi Jinping and his lieutenants in Beijing. And right now they're crying help. Question is, there's so much wrong that one direction isn't going to do it. So I start by asking Mary this question about COVID ripping through rural China. When last we spoke, the story was in Shanghai and Ningbo, the port cities that were connected to the supply chain, connected to the world. There was also reporting in Beijing, this following the interruption or move away from the COVID zero policy practice these last years that had led to a downturn in the Chinese economy. Now we hear more downturn, more talk, but what was in the big cities is now in rural China, which is a huge number of people without adequate protection. Is this the catastrophe it looks like, Mary, or are the Chinese people weathering this to your measure? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. As usual, it's very difficult to know what the numbers actually are because we don't have free access to China, and we don't have journalists who can roam freely around. Our diplomats' movements are circumscribed. But it's reasonable to assume, given the mortality rates and the infection rates in the West, you can extrapolate out and I think pretty confidently say that, yes, it is ripping through China, every single part of China, because you can't prevent people from getting the virus. And so it's a human catastrophe on a massive scale. And we're also learning just how little the Chinese Communist Party did to prepare for this moment of reopening, whether it was to look at drugs that help ease the symptoms of COVID or to look at Western vaccines or to bolster their ICU units. None of that stuff happened. And so now the Chinese people are paying the price once again for the party's failed governance.
Yes, the failed governance extends in several directions, so I don't want to do them all swept up together. The economy is in a downturn. That's a polite way of putting it. It's crashing. We really don't have numbers that are trustworthy, and I'm presuming Beijing doesn't either, because their municipal governments, their regions, deceive the central government, and the central government then seeks to deceive the world. My understanding here, Mary, is that they're going through a bad patch. That's the way we'd say it, a recession. Or is it worse than that? Are we looking at the business plan failing as it's been failing for many years? And we permitted ourselves to be fooled that they were pumping it up with subsidization, with printing money, with theft of intellectual property. And now that trick has run out. Have we hit a limit here?
Well, yes, but you've also have to add on top of that the enormous restrictions that General Secretary Xi Jinping has put on the most productive parts of the Chinese economy, particularly the technology sector. Just in these last days, Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, who's lauded throughout the world as a great entrepreneur, and he may very well be, but you know, the construction of his empire was entirely dependent on his ties to the CCP and the advantages that they gave him, which is not often reported, but kind of crucial to the story. He made a speech that criticized some of the regulators that were governing his company several years ago, and then he was disappeared. And that was part of a larger effort by Xi Jinping to take out anybody from positions of power, be they in the military or the corporate sector or his political rivals. And Mr. Ma was a victim of that. But as a result, There's very little to sustain the Chinese economy at a time when the rest of the world is in a downturn. So you don't have the demand for Chinese exports. You have an extremely inefficient system of capital allocation because much of it is politicized. You have a lot of corruption. You've had a collapse in the property market. And then if you lock people up in their homes for 3 years, as the Xi regime did, well, you don't have a lot of demand there either. And so, as you say, John, all of this stuff adds up to a collapse. And so it's no surprise to me, as we've discussed on your program before, that Xi Jinping is going to embark on a charm offensive to try to get foreign capital to come back into the country. He's in entice mode right now. He's charming the Europeans. He's trying to make nice with us here in America and elsewhere. He needs the economic activity to stabilize his country and keep him in power.
Yes, I saw that the new foreign minister, who was a former ambassador to the United States, made a peculiar remark about how impressive the Americans were. It was so obvious and so limited in its explanation that you presumed that it was an order. They put out the word impressive and everybody said it that day. So that raises the question of, is this the same old China we're dealing with? Here's the change, Mary. In June of last year, 2022, the NATO countries met in Madrid and issued a lengthy policy statement. And in that policy statement, it was adamant that Russia and China are allied in making war on liberty, allied. And there was no mitigation of that. In fact, there was illustration of China and how it's conducted itself online and with bad actors around the world, and that it supports Russia. We have other reason to believe that's true, including the most recent phone call between Xi Jinping and President Putin, pledging trust to each other and inviting Xi Jinping to a state visit to Moscow. But my interest is, does this change the nature of trade with China? We're trading with the enemy, an enemy that practices routinely bullying its own neighborhood and making threats around the world when it feels like it. Does this mean that there is no return to the old ways, Mary, that what we're dealing with here is the unknown of a hostile power?
Well, rhetorically, the U.S. government has not gotten to the point to call communist China an enemy, although I agree with you, John, that is what it is. In practical terms, they are already behaving as if it is in certain circumstances. Most notably, President Biden, in his meeting just in these last hours with the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Mexican President Andrés AMLO, as he's known, specifically said, we are working together to make sure that our supply chains function. And I'm paraphrasing him here, but this is what Biden said and Trudeau. That so that if we have another disruption, we can continue to produce the goods that we need. And they cited the pandemic. And so it's clear that the U.S. government is aware that we cannot be dependent on China, at least in certain strategic industries like PPE and pharmaceutical inputs, things that we need to protect ourselves from events like a global pandemic. It's just not happening fast enough or without enough urgency.
You mentioned the pandemic.
But we're certainly not going back to the days of, you know, globalization for globalization's sake. I think that's over.
Yes, and I don't hear the word Chinese miracle anymore, Mary. That's been retired. However, what I do hear is that COVID is not known. We do not know about origins. And I read this news from The Hill. House GOP to focus COVID panel on virus origins pandemic spending. Republicans have significantly retooled the focus of the House panel investigating the government's response to the pandemic, a move that aligns with the new majority's oversight focus. As part of the rules package that passed the House 220 to 213, the 12-member Select Committee on Coronavirus Response will be charged with examining the origins of the pandemic. I'll stop there, Mary, because you and I have talked for years about how the non-cooperation of the People's Republic of China, the Chinese Communist Party, has led to the unknowns of the virus. We see the results now. It continues. The variants continue. And I'm told that the most recent one, the one that's dominating, according to news, in the East Coast of the United States, is a recombination of different variants of Omicron. In other words, the monster has children, and then the children get together and have monsters. None of that has been solved because we can't solve the origins of the virus. Is it natural? Is it out there in nature to come at it, to come at us again? Or is it something that was concocted in the Wuhan library? The Republicans are going to investigate it. I won't ask you a partisan question, Mary. I will come to the fact that this lays down a marker to the Chinese Communist Party. We don't trust you. Is that a fair generalization at this point?
Yeah, it is. But you really need bipartisanship, John, and a unified voice, not just with the within the United States, but within the free world to really get behind demands and to push organizations like the World Health Organization. All of the circumstantial evidence points to a lab leak, but we'll never be 100% sure. And we may, you know, the people who know may have been killed or disappeared already, and they don't exist anymore, and we will never be able to get to them. But it is vitally important that we figure out the origins of this virus to the extent that we can, because we don't want it to happen again. I mean, recall, we already had a terrible pandemic erupt out of mainland China with the SARS virus in the early 2000s. And that was an even deadlier disease than COVID. But it wasn't as transmissible. But what if the next one is as is just as bad as SARS, but just as transmissible as COVID? We could see deaths in the tens or hundreds of millions of people. So that's why this is such an important effort. And in many respects, I wish that the Democrat-led Congress had looked at it with urgency. And we were at a place where it wasn't politicized, because this is something that's just vital to all Americans and really, all people around the world, particularly the Chinese people who, as we've discussed, are going to bear the brunt of this terrible man-made disease.
Mary, do we continue to trade with China? Do the American people continue to buy products made by a regime that is hostile to Europe, hostile to America, and deceives us about the actual facts of the virus? Why do we buy from such a creature?
I think we continue to do that because for four decades, U.S. presidential administrations of both stripes had this naive hope that trade would result in liberalization economically and politically. And once those factories and supply chains are built, that's a lot of sunk cost for U.S. companies. They're not going to just rip it all up and move. And also, there has to be somewhere to move to, if you'll excuse the dangling preposition. And there aren't many places that have the infrastructure and the cost structure that make that economically feasible. And that's why it's such a critical time to have political leadership to come up with some policy ideas to allow this reorientation of trade to happen. You know, ideally, when President Biden goes to a place like Mexico or meets with Justin Trudeau, as they're doing right now, there would be some kind of strategic plan, instead of touting agreements like they did with the Europeans to raise everybody's minimum tax rates. I mean, okay, that's not real helpful, not feasible, not helpful. In fact, that's deleterious to investment, exactly the opposite of what we need. If anything, we need structures that harness the potential of our incredibly innovative private sectors and to help them work together to construct a supply chain that isn't just reliable, but that is superior to the supply chains of the authoritarian nations of the world, to give us that advantage that we need, because this isn't just a U.S.-China challenge, John. It's a free world versus China, Russia, Iran, Pakistan, North Korea challenge. And that's the way that we should start talking about it, in my view, and thinking about it. It's a far more complex set of alliances arrayed against us, and we need to be serious and to think differently than we did in the Cold War, because this is a very different kind of fight.
We're headed to Ukraine. Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.